This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Happy New Year,
Happy New Year. Oh my God, 2026, can you believe it?
All intends to be forgot. Is all Lang Syne's in a different language, right? That's not English. Is it Old English?
It's in English. The words you just said were English.
Yeah, but Auld Lang Syne is not English, I don't think.
Oh,
is
yeah.
it?
I have no idea.
Do you know what I mean?
I have absolutely no commitment to New Year's.
Auld Lang Syne. I'm Googling this.
Yeah,
Googling
please.
It.
I'm Scottish. Fascinated to know.
It's Scottish. It's a Scots language. It means old long since.
I'll drink you like a glass of water.
What are you doing?
You don't know that?
With
you
don't Jesse know that Buckley's
reference? Yeah. Yeah, it's relevant. It's more is relevant than
Buckley's
this.
Scottish?
Also, no, but Paul Mescal is, isn't he?
No, he's Irish.
Damn it. I had a shot there.
Almost he's worked. In Normal People, a show famously
okay,
about.
Okay, like
Irish
I watched
people.
That. And like he'd be the first Scotsman to play an Irishman, you know?
I just think he's first... famous. I think he's famously Irish.
Okay.
Like that's the number one thing about him.
Is
oh
it,
my gosh.
Is it?
I think so.
How many non-Irish people has he played? I think majority.
Yes, but his main role that made him famous was an Irish person in a very Irish book about very Irish people.
Yeah, I blocked that from my memory because Sally Rooney.
You weren't watching those sexually explicit scenes during the pandemic?
I actually wasn't.
Didn't we do an episode on it? Maybe we didn't.
Not.
That was a long time ago.
You
we
made
should
me read
have.
The book, and I said that was shit. I hated every minute of it, and then
oh,
I
yeah, you don't
silenced
like Sally
it
Rooney.
On my Google alerts. Yeah.
Rude. No. I love Sally Rooney.
I know.
A queen, an Irish queen.
I know we have things to talk about, but I've got to say, like, you've been posting your 2025, like, roundups or, like, your December movie ranking.
Oh, and I know
and
you're
like,
going to hate
oh
them.
Oh, my God.
I know you're going to hate
oh
them.
Oh, my God, Matthew. Like, we're a decade into this almost, and it's like, you still just shock me sometimes with your taste. Like, going to bat for, what is it, Ella McKay? What are we doing here?
Ella McKay? Did you even see Ella McKay? You did not see it. So do not come and tell me that it's
but
a
but you're
bad
just
movie.
A contrarian. It's not a 5-star movie. It can't be.
I
just
didn't
know
give it 5 stars.
Okay, what, 4.5? Four?
I think I gave it 4. I think I gave it 4. It was a fun, it was a very fun movie-going experience. It's a romp. It's a movie about, honestly, you should like it. It's a movie about a woman who just tries a little too hard sometimes and it rubs people the wrong way.
I've never been accused of that. I don't try hard enough. That's my problem. I'll tell my sister to watch that. That's her energy.
She's a governor for 3 days.
Oh,
the plot is cockamamie as hell. Like, it's a fun movie.
It's
sorry.
Crazy. It's crazy.
But look. My okay, here's the thing. My version of element like me, Ella McKay, is you with these random ass disaster movies. Like, it's the same thing. You just have tapped into the mind of a straight man, and I have tapped into the mind of a lesbian.
No, probably like an 80-year-old white dude still. Who wrote it? Who directed it? Tell me. Who stars in it?
I
a bunch of
I
old
don't
people.
No, the girl
old
from
people
Sex
jabbering.
Education. The girl from Sex Education is
but
Ella
she's
McKay.
Surrounded by old people. Isn't like Helen Mirren in it or something?
Jamie Lee Curtis plays her aunt. Curtis.
Okay.
But
yeah.
There's also Saoirse Ronan's husband. Saoirse
I feel
Ronan,
like there's an
another famous
of
Irish
old
person.
People.
It was I mean, I do people. I do like old people movies like Down Abbey, sorry, Sue
yeah.
me. But I also like non-old people related things. Like you think bunch of old people loved I Know What You Did Last Summer, the reboot? No, I don't think so. But I was going to bed for that.
Yeah. Yeah, no. There's going to be a lot to discuss as the award season continues. But speaking of Critics' Choice Awards.
Critics' Choice last night.
You're a voter, right?
I am a voter.
Oh my God. How did
I vote for any of the winners? I don't. I'm not sure.
No, Ella McKay wasn't on there, so you just rescinded your vote. You said this is a sham. I don't want to be part of this.
I said power Ella to the people. I'm resisting. I actually protested outside of the venue last night. Just me doing the Ella McKay challenge outside the venue. No, the Critics' Choice Awards were last night. I always sort of forget that. Despite me voting on them, that Critics' Choice is for TV and movies, and that there's just so many categories. I didn't watch the actual awards last night. I saw some clips and stuff today. But it's like so many people are getting awards at this ceremony. They are truly giving them out to 9 million TV shows and then also the movie categories. So I didn't pay too much attention to the TV stuff, but I did think the movies were kind of interesting because I think typically the Golden Globe Awards are before the Critics' Choice Awards, but this year, for whatever reason, they flipped. So Golden Globes are next week and Critics' Choice were this week. So Critics' Choice was really like the first sort of like major voted awards of the year. And I do think it sort of like sets a little bit of a precedent for things, just that Once Upon a Time, or not Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, One Battle After Another won Best Picture, Best Director, which I think will probably happen. Jessie Buckley won Best Actress, which she seems like the front runner. Timothy Chalamet won Best Actor, which also seems like it's probably going to happen at the Oscars.
He's gunning for it.
Well, and the thing is, like, for whatever reason, and I don't understand this, like, Michael B. Jordan does not seem to be, like, making much of an attempt. Like, Sinners was so good, and I think his performance is incredible in it. But Timothy Chalamet is, like, everywhere, doing everything, all kinds of viral stunts and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I think there's
he's
just,
Mr.
Like,
Hype Beast, and Michael B. Jordan is above that.
Well, I mean, yes. And I think Michael B. Jordan does give the better performance, and I like him more. But I'm sort of like, it doesn't really seem like he wants it in the same way.
I think the Sinners thing is so interesting because it was very clear that, you know, obviously it was well received. It did huge numbers and people are talking about it. But when it first came out, everyone was like, well, let's put our noses up at this thing. Oh, Black culture. Well, and like Variety's whole analysis of its number. Like, I just think they're being realistic. It's like, I think there's a jaded energy maybe to the to the group now, because they're like, well, they're not going to respect us, and it's sad and unfortunate. But I mean, it did okay. It got a few different random awards. I think it got 4.
It won a screenplay award.
No,
it definitely won things, and I think it's going to get a ton of Oscar nominations as well. Like it's definitely not out of any conversations. I just think that for whatever reason, with like One Battle After Another and with Marty Supreme, and they just sort of like came in, and it hasn't seemed like Sinners has like done the full like media press. Like, I think about Everything Everywhere All at Once, which also came out in the spring. But then by the time you got to award season, it was like Ke-Hi Kwan and Michelle Yeoh and Stephanie Hsu and Jamie Lee Curtis were truly like everything. Yeah. You were constantly seeing them all over social media at every like podunk awards gala, film festival, whatever. And it's like the Sinners people, I'm like, I haven't seen a Delroy Lindo interview or or like any sort of like red carpet moments from these people. I'm like, it's a good movie. And other than Michael B. Jordan, it doesn't seem like that. It's not like that cast is full of like super, super famous people who you think like, oh wow, they're really busy. They're not going to be able to show up for things. So I'm kind of surprised that they haven't done more. But the real shocker of last night at the Critics' Choice Awards were the supporting categories, because I don't think anybody thought that Jacob Elordi was going to win for Frankenstein. And yeah, he did out of nowhere. And now it's sort of like, wait, are Jacob Elordi and Timothy Chalamet going to win Oscars in the same year? Like,
no.
How crazy would that be?
Yeah, well, and then your Lady Gladys.
Yes. And then Amy Madigan won for Weapons, which I think legitimately could happen at the Oscars.
It's so funny.
Because I just think that, like, that is a performance. It's so big. It's so memorable. Like, you leave Weapons and that's the thing you think about. Also, yeah. Amy Madigan has been acting for, like, you know, 70 years. So everybody yeah. in Hollywood, like, knows her. She's had bit roles and all of these other things. And the people that she's up against are either, like, Ariana Grande, who is obviously good, but, like, in a sort of bad movie. Or you have, like, multiple people from Sinners, multiple people from Sentimental Value, multiple people from One Battle After Another, who are all good, but are in, like, more ensemble mm-hmm. kind of roles where they have less to do. Like, I think Tiana Taylor is obviously great in One Battle After Another, but she's only in the first, like, 30 minutes of it. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, Elle Fanning is really good in Sentimental Value, but again, she's like the third or fourth billed person, and there's just like a lot of other there's a lot of other stuff where I feel like it, and I think if you love Sentimental Value, it's like, okay, well, are you voting for Elle Fanning? Are you voting for the sister? Are you voting for Renata Reinsva and Best Actress and then not voting for one of the supporting
actors? Well, like, I mean, we have a voter here with us. I want to understand your process here, because you've talked a lot of shit about Oscar voters not watching the movies. So yes. You're faced with the Critics' Choice Award ballot.
Yes.
What are you doing?
Well, so the nominations are really actually kind of annoying. Like, it's a lot harder to put together a nominations list than you think it is, because there's so many movies that you've seen over the course of the year.
Yeah.
And I can look through my Letterboxd and stuff, but it's not like there's a list of, like, okay, here's the people available for this.
Right.
So you kind of just have to pull things out of thin air. And then also at the same time, you have to try to think, like, okay, I could vote for, you know, some random person in a really small thing in the nominating phase, but they're probably not going to get nominated. So I need to sort of vote for people who I think are, like, at least plausibly going to get mm-hmm. nominated and might need some extra help. So it's like, okay, I'm not going to vote for, you know, Gal Gadot in Snow White, because no one is voting for Gal Gadot in Snow White. Mm-hmm. But I might be like, oh, you know, who's really good is, like, one of the women in Sinners. And I don't know, they're kind of on the bubble. So let me vote for one of them and not vote for somebody who's, like, higher up. So it's a little bit trickier. Then when you're actually doing the, like, voting and you have the nominees, yeah. that's a lot easier, because then you can just go through. And I have seen almost everything. I think there was maybe one or two movies in, like, the animated category that I hadn't seen. But for the most part, I've seen all of this stuff. So I just vote but for
you're voting your I truth, like, or are you strategizing? Are you thinking, like, oh, well, this movie will probably win this category, so in this category, I'm going to do this?
No, I'm mostly just voting for who my favorite is in every category. But I do think there is, like, I guess maybe there is a little bit of, like, okay, I liked One Battle After Another. I also really liked Sinners. So I'm not just going to vote, like, for Sinners for everything or One Battle for everything. I'm going to be like, okay, I think Sinners was a better movie, so let me vote for that. But I do think Paul Thomas Anderson, like, deserves a best director Oscar. He has had a longer career. He's had a lot of really good movies that I like. Like, maybe let me vote for him in that category instead. You know, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But for this, like, I think for best actor, I definitely voted for Michael B. Jordan. For best actress, I definitely voted for Amanda Seyfried in The Testament of Anne Lee, because I think that she's great in that. I voted for Amy Madigan for Weapons in Best Supporting Actress. Best Actor, I think I voted for Stellan Skarsgård for Sentimental Value. I might have voted for
person. You just Benicio love that.
Del Toro for One Battle After Another, but I can't remember.
Yeah.
I definitely did not vote for Sean Penn, and I did not vote for Jacob Elordi. I can tell you that for sure.
Well, fun. Yeah, no. The You know, someone has to be the first award. And I guess Critics' Choice being first is interesting because now we get to see how the others line up with it. But yeah, I thought they were fine. It was, you know, it was expected, I guess, but not annoying.
It was also sort of hard to, like, I wasn't trying to watch, but I saw online people complain that it was difficult to figure out how to watch this because I guess you had to have, like, cable and you had to have a direct-to-TV subscription. And then I was trying to watch Chelsea Handler's monologue on Twitter, and I kept seeing things that, like, where the clip had been there, but then it had been taken down for, like, copyright infringement, and I couldn't find, like, the full monologue clip. I could just find individual jokes, and I'm like, I feel like that is, like, I don't know what the point of that is, because, like, sure, DirecTV, like, you're not going to go back and watch it on DirecTV, so, like, DirecTV should post the video itself and then get all of these, the social media engagement or whatever. But I could not find this clip. So
yeah,
I thought that was annoying.
Yeah, I did. I do find, not to derail too much, but the Timmy Chalamet of it all, like him going so hard and him sort of being in this like Marty Supreme sort of self-aggrandizing shtick. And, like, he is gunning for that Oscar. And nothing made that more clear than him actually acknowledging Kylie Jenner's existence in his acceptance speech.
Because it's saying, like, you've dated for 3 years.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, so you're, like, performing. I just think it's fascinating, the strategy. Because you go from, like, being, like, there's nothing to say in an article about you, realizing people don't like that you come across as impersonal and like, a fuckboy. And so now you're doubling down on this, like, committed, long-term relationship, partnered up, like, angle. It's interesting. Not to say that the whole relationship is a fake or a farce, but I just think there's clearly strategy in him playing up this, like, you're my foundation.
I wonder, okay, not to sound like too, my head's up my own ass or whatever for this comment, but I sort of wonder if this isn't a little bit of, like, an extension of the character to a certain degree.
Like his annoying behavior or the Kylie Jenner?
Like, both.
Oh, okay.
Because last year he was campaigning for the Bob Dylan movie.
Yes.
And it was sort of an odd campaign, but it was a lot of, like, oh, like, I'm not going to talk about that or whatever. There was, like, the musical stuff where he was singing. Like, it felt like he, like, since Bob Dylan is this kind of, like, weird, enigmatic character who you'd, like, kind of know about but kind of don't, and he's always, like, lying about things and you're never really sure what's going on, that media cycle for Timothy Chalamet was, like, sort of leaning into that vibe more. Mm-hmm. And then this, like, the way he's acting feels very much like the
it's so annoying. Yeah.
And it's, like, big and bombastic and all over the place. And I kind of wonder if he's not, like, just sort of, not that he's still in character, but, like, sort of sticking to a theme a bit more than, like, it's not quite the Austin Butler situation where he was doing the Elvis voice the entire time, but, like, something similar to that. And I don't know. It is interesting to watch because, you know, I feel like people campaigning for awards are usually just kind of, like, boring and very, you know, like, oh, yes, like, blah, blah, blah. You know, they're sort of giving their, like, pat.
Yeah.
Interest to things. And Timothy Chalamet is doing, like, crazy stuff. But it also, I don't know if it, like, could come back to bite him and sort of rubbing people the wrong way, because it is a vibe. And, like, I can tell you for certain that the Academy does not like the Kardashians. Like, that is not something that they're interested in. They are not impressed by that. Like, him shouting her out, I feel like, only hurts his awards chances. So I kind of am like, I don't know why you necessarily did that. But it is, like, a big publicity move, because obviously, he's, like, people are paying attention to this. And I do think, to a certain degree, he wants the movie to do well and he wants tickets to sell, and it really has. So I think his publicity is, like, working to a certain degree. separate of like the awards angle, because Marty Supreme is still in theaters. Like some of these movies are not, they came out months ago, but Marty Supreme like came out what, like 10 days ago. So
yeah,
you know, I don't know.
I know. Heaven help us.
I watched Heaven it. Help us. okay. What else do we need to talk about since we haven't met in a while? Oh, I want to talk about the, not to derail us into politics, Maduro situation, but I did think it was very funny that Trump's like, you know, Venezuela invasion, like, shut down the airspace in the Caribbean, and so all of these billionaires were trapped in St. Barts because it was one of the islands that like you couldn't fly in or out of, so you had all of these billionaires on these super yachts and they couldn't get out, and it was like Tom Brady was there and Leonardo DiCaprio was there, and apparently it was just, like, mass panic of all of these like in crazy rich people who have never been told no in their lives, like all stuck on this island and on these boats where they have, you know, like limited resources. Like it's giving Fire Festival a little bit. And then in the middle of this, people were like, oh wait, I think Alex Earl is dating not Tom Hanks, what's his, Tom Brady, and so people were speculating about that, but then other people were like, oh no, they're not dating, she just had to like go to his yacht because like everything was shut down. So I don't know what was going on there, but I do always love a moment where billionaires, you know, sort of get like dragged down with the rest of us.
Yeah, they have to go through something.
Yeah,
that's funny, I hadn't heard about that. That makes more sense about the Leo joke at the
I don't follow super yacht culture, but apparently there's only certain places that like accommodate these super yachts, and you know, just because of like sizes of harbors and things, and so lots of older islands or islands that are like built up too much like can't do it because they don't have like there's buildings there and they can't, you know, build stuff out. But St. Barts, for whatever reason, is an island that I guess like wasn't as sort of popular or built up. So all of these billionaires kind of like took it over as, oh, this is the place where we can all park our super yachts. And so now for New Year's and sort of in the winter, that is where all of these super yachts go to park. And then a lot of times in the summer, they'll go to various spots in the Mediterranean. But yes, I just learned that this year because of this whole debacle. But yeah, like Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk and all these people are on these giant ass super yachts in the Caribbean, which I am like, I'm sorry, I don't understand the appeal of a yacht. It's like, it's giving glamping to me. Like, I would just rather be in a building, you know?
I mean, I think some of them are as nice as a building.
No, like they definitely are. But I'm like, I'd rather stay like at a fancy mansion or a hotel or something that like has a pool and a whatever than to be like on this boat where, I mean, like, yes, I know you're probably not getting seasick because it's like, you know, big enough or whatever, but I don't know. It's just like,
yeah. So you're not an ocean, like, cause I don't like boats. So that's the main thing is you're just,
I don't mind a boat, like, oh, we're going to go out on a boat for like a couple of hours.
Okay.
But I don't understand the obsession with boats to the level of, oh, I need to stay on like a giant one. In the same way that I don't understand the obsession with like camping. I mean, kind of, but it's like, I would rather like stay at a hotel, go on a hike for 2 hours, come back, stay at the hotel, eat at the restaurant, whatever, than to be like shuffling around like, you know.
I bet it's just like privacy, international waters, you know, it's low key. You get to, you know, rule your own roost for a little.
I guess, but yeah. If I became a billionaire, I'm not buying a super yacht. Yeah. That's not on
okay.
My
story
list
idea.
Plans. Okay.
What about boats? And you can interview Leo and see like why. You know, just ask why. Why boats?
What is it about boats that you're sort of so into? Like, I don't get it. Boats?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Headline perfect. Now. Next TikTok is analyzing the amenities of Leonardo DiCaprio's super yacht versus the 5-star hotel on shore.
I mean, you know, it's a
something there.
Yeah, there definitely is. Okay, what other stories do we need to discuss?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I saw that Haim got married.
Oh, yes. Essie Haim got married. She got married to like a like some sort of
Bitcoin guy.
Yes. I didn't even know that she was dating anybody, which maybe speaks to me being a bad fan. But I was like, I didn't realize that she was engaged or whatever. And then all of a sudden she was getting married to this random Bitcoin guy, which I do feel
makes me feel
slightly less of her for marrying someone in that space. I'm like, this is actually an article. There's a weird vibe of like these artist people kind of like ending up with these
tech nerds
who I can sort of get why the personalities would fit, but then like the money thing is weird to me. And also I don't like the
All richer than
that these like, well, are they?
Oh yeah. Oh my God. You think Haim
is richer than the tech billionaire?
No. I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying.
Right. No, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is what I don't like. Like, I guess to a certain degree, maybe that sort of evens the playing field because, like, person A is famous, person B is rich, kind of. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't love that. But what I do love is that it was her dress. I thought her dress was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And it was very, like, gorgeous in sort of an ugly way. And I do think
sort of their
that definitely fits their personality. And I've seen a number of TikToks about brides trying to be like timeless at their wedding and how when you try to pick something that you think looks timeless in this current time, it inevitably isn't timeless. And so therefore like it sort of locks you in. And what you need to do if you want to look quote unquote timeless at your wedding is sort of pick something that's almost like cut out from like that's so odd or from like very specifically from a different period of time so that then and I feel like with Estee's dress it's so like it's so kind of odd and going against it's like sort of 80s energy but also has like some like 1900s kind of vibes to it. Like I think it really works in a way that I was very impressed by. And then also because the Haim sisters are best friends with Paul Thomas Anderson, he created a movie marathon for the next day, which I was sort of confused about. Like for the hangover day, he put together a movie marathon for the wedding guests.
Like just a double feature option type thing.
No, it was like six movies. It was Repo Man, Casablanca, Barry Lyndon, Casino, The Birdcage, and Father of the Bride. Such it started at 11 a.m. and went until like 1 p.m.
Well, that math doesn't math.
What do you mean?
You mean 1 a.m.?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. And Taylor Swift was there.
Oh, yes. That's right. She was.
I saw
the pictures through the bush. How
does that make you feel?
Also so not close. Great. I'm sort of shocked that Taylor Swift hasn't managed to get her claws into Paul Thomas Anderson for something or another yet. But have they had any? I don't think they've had any sort of like.
Why would they cross paths?
Well, because of the Haim thing. And like Paul Thomas Anderson directs a lot of Haim's music videos.
Doesn't she have the cinematographer from some PTA films or something?
Maybe. And then she also has the and then she also famously had the director's conversation with Martin McDonagh.
Yeah. You're just saying she has
no I mean that's like the another famous director. Yeah. You know. But
so funny. I would love a Paul Thomas Anderson Taylor Swift sit down.
We need to talk about Taylor Swift. I can't believe we've sort of gotten this far in there because she released this documentary. And I feel like I've seen nothing about this online. Yeah. And I asked I asked a couple of my friends who were Swifties, like, oh, did you watch it? What did you think? Blah, blah, blah. And they were like, no, not really. Like, I really wasn't that interested, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, this is.
Yeah. I mean, number one, she shouldn't have done this slow release. It made no sense. And it made her compete with things like Stranger Things. Like she literally moved her last premiere date from Christmas Eve or whatever to the day before because Stranger Things was going to eat that up.
Uh-huh.
And And yeah, I haven't even watched them. I saw so many clips that I feel like it's surprisingly, it's sort of like, okay, giving us nothing. Like, it's just in some ways an interesting insight into like her brain, but it's not really about, there's not a lot about the tour. It's like mainly about how much she loves Travis Kelce. And it's like, well, that's not interesting.
it's more about Travis Kelce than the tour.
I mean, that's what I've seen, at least in like the later batch of episodes. It's like all about how she and Travis met and Travis coming to the show. And oh, Mama Swift loves Travis. And actually, she helped set them up. And it's like, okay, that's, and again, I haven't seen it. Those are the only clips that I've seen. So it might just be a situation of what gets the clicks. But that's a complaint I saw too, was like, I didn't expect this to be just about her boyfriend. But yeah.
Well, I'm also interested because Travis Kelce's mother is going to be on the new season of Traitors that comes out later this week. So I'm interested to see how that sort of shakes out. And if there are any, you know, kind of Taylor Swift, like if she's like talking about Taylor Swift, or if that's something she's kind of avoiding in her, you know, confessionals and such.
So funny.
Yeah. I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast, but I saw something, I saw a tweet or something. I guess this probably would have been after our last episode that was like 2025 was the year that we realized that everyone has been over Taylor Swift, Donald Trump, and Stranger Things for longer than we thought, or something like we all realize that nobody's actually like cares about this thing anymore, even though we sort of thought at the beginning of the year, like, oh yes, like these are the things that everyone cares about, and then they sort of appeared, and we was like, no, actually, maybe not that much. Although at the same time, I do think like, it just sort of depends on what circles you're running in, whether or not those things have any power or not. Because obviously, Stranger Things quite the internet discussions going on.
You know, 2025 also reminded me, like, I was surprised in the opposite way that people still care about Avatar. Like, how did that make another $1 billion? I'm not surprised, but I am like, who's seeing this that much?
I mean, the thing about Avatar, which I always forget, and which is the same thing with Jurassic Park, is that these movies do incredibly well overseas.
I know, like, but why?
I read an article about this, and they were saying that, like, so lots of things about American culture don't necessarily like transfer over to people in other places, especially in Asia, where there's a big, you know, where these massive audiences in India and China. But that, like, more kind of supernaturally things, because those aren't like real in America, they translate better. So like dinosaurs do well everywhere. The Avatar aliens do well everywhere. And the story is kind of like simple and straightforward enough that, you know, you don't really like need, you know, you can sort of like,
but like the U.S. numbers are still high too.
I mean, the U.S. numbers are also high. It's, and I, like, do think that
why
people care about them,
but it has like no impact somehow. Like, it's like, yeah, it's a $1 billion movie, but it's not getting its own amusement park. You know, it's not.
Well, no, it does.
It does.
It has like isn't the tree ride in Animal Kingdom Avatar?
Oh, I have no idea.
I think Animal Kingdom has a whole Avatar section.
Oh,
Disney World. Wow. I think. Okay.
I've got to go. I've got to see what this is all.
Have you never been to Disney World?
Not since Avatar.
Oh.
Sorry. I don't live on the right coast to make a journey to Florida.
I know.
Whenever a new Avatar ride pops up.
Well, I guess, I mean, I feel like you guys have to be due for a Disney trip at some point. Because you go to Disneyland all the time. And like, Penny is now of Disney age.
Right. Right, but it's like so much easier and cheaper to just go to Disneyland.
Right.
Like, why make the trek out?
Well, because Disney World has different things. I mean, I've never been to Disneyland, so.
I know. The
opposite for me.
If I'm going to blow money on a trip, it wouldn't be Disney, but I do agree that I think Disney World would be more fun in some ways.
I went again last year for the first time in a while with my sister, and it is like, like Disney adults are crazy people, and I sort of don't want to say anything positive Disney because I don't want to be painted in that light. Yeah, but I do think there is like the parks are very well thought out. Like the rides are cool. They're very different, and it's not like other amusement parks. It's not like
it's clean. Yeah,
well, and it just feels more like put together. Yeah, like you go to Universal Studios. Oh, yeah. And it's like there's just a ramshackle quality to it where it's like, okay, the Harry Potter section is like new, but then you're walking around and you're like, wait, why is there like a Dr. Seuss
It's very organized.
Like 80 years ago.
They care about aesthetic. You know, they're building a story as you go through the capitalist shops.
And it is, it is like capitalism 101, and so that I also don't like. But I do think there's a certain like magic for kids especially that I can see. You like, even though it's capitalism, there's like this quality to it
that's it's a product they care about a lot.
That's different than like Amazon where it's like, okay, there's that's like devoid of creativity. But well, should we get into love it or hate it to wrap up the episode?
I mean, it's the holiday season. I'm trying to think of everything I saw. We're gonna do an episode on Stranger Things. My god, are you okay?
No, I had a cold. I had to
oh my god,
you know,
straight Vecna's got you. It's like
sorry.
We are covering Stranger Things, so for my love it or hate it, let's go with love it, and I'll say like it. I saw Anaconda with my family.
I was going to also say this, and I was also going to say that I liked it. Oh, my gosh.
You know, I saw like terrible reviews going in, and I was like, wow, this is going to be like painful. But it wasn't. It was like exactly what I thought it would be. It's like, obviously, this is going to be silly, but it was like self-aware. They were all having a good time. And it's Paul Rudd and Jack Black. And it's like that charisma is unstoppable. So it's like, I don't know. I was surprised to see it like handle like critics' response so poorly to it. Because it's like, this is the setup. It's a comedy about people rebooting Anaconda on their own. Like, it's nonsense. Like, what did you expect? And it served up exactly what you want.
Like, I really enjoyed this a lot more than I thought I was going. Like, I thought it might be fun, but I was sort of worried that it was going to be one of those things where, like where are the jokes?
Like the
premise sort of was good, but then it didn't really, like, have anything extra in it. And Jack Black is so funny. I also love Steve Zahn.
Hysterical. I know. Like,
and
where has he been?
Good in this. Tandy Newton was good. Tandiwe Newton was good in this. Like, she's sort of just like the woman, but like,
she's having fun,
you know, she's having fun. And I thought that the premise of this is so ingenious and so meta that it's not like, oh, we're just doing another Anaconda movie. We're taking this like sort of bad campy horror film and turning it into a comedy because we're pretending that these comedians who are sort of, you know, down on their luck people from Buffalo, New York, have decided that they are going to, or one of them like cons them into thinking that they have the rights and they have to go film this. And like every beat was funny. And yes, some of it is in the trailer, but, and you know that like the snake is going to fall into the propeller or whatnot. But I thought that the whole thing with like Sony and the Sony boat, and like, I thought all of that was great. And that wasn't in the trailer. I was like actively laughing. And even though that pig scene was in the trailer, I was cackling.
I was
laughing so hard in the theater watching Jack Black like run down the hill with the pig bouncing on his head. Oh my gosh, so good. I'm like a great movie.
It was great.
I'm sad that people didn't like it, although it's done well in the box office.
I think the audience knew what was up. And and everyone in the theater had a good time. Like, you go to some of these comedies that turn out to be kind of a drag, or like, you think they have the magic sauce, and then it turns out to be something like Jungle Cruise, and you're like, oh my God.
Yes.
Such a pain to get through. But this was like, it was fun. It was fast. It was dumb without being like, it was very aware of its own dumbness and like leaned into it. And yeah, I thought it was.
And it was only 90 minutes.
Yeah, it was so nice.
And okay, it has a 52% on Rotten Tomatoes, but a 76 audio score. So
it was like 23 when I went Christmas Eve or whatever. I was like, oh dear Lord. I was like, this was a mistake.
I gotta bump this up. I gotta be like 10 out of 10. Meanwhile, a primate has a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes currently. So
see, this is where I get confused.
Which I haven't seen, but it's like what?
I know. I'm like, who is writing these reviews? Is it like they send the guy who's doing Marty Supreme to go watch Anaconda? Like, I don't know. There should just be a different metric for these movies. Because it's like, it was well written for what it was. It's not trying to be a monologue film, you know?
The David and Goliath animated movie has a 74% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's like, who? Like, what?
All of Utah. I'm sorry. That was all the screenings in Utah was just David. It was like, I was like, oh, it's the holiday season. I can finally see Marty Supreme. No, not a showing near David. Me. It was just David. And it's because there were no other kids' movies to compete with. You know, usually there's something we can take Penny
Wait,
to.
What about SpongeBob?
Oh my God, I know. Why did that get a Christmas release? I was like, who SpongeBob. Cares about this?
Big guy. Yeah. SpongeBob, big guy, pants okay. Yeah. Like, I'm like, should I go see that? I like the Ice Spice song.
I did not see it, so I cannot say.
Did Penny go see Zootopia too?
Yeah.
Did she like that?
Yeah, she did. She likes, did you see it?
Yes, I thought it was
She's
good.
Always saying, hey, bub. Just like, come to the point where it's just.
Did Penny go see Tester and Van Lee?
No, it wasn't showing anywhere, but I wish she really would have responded to the
music. She would have loved it. Yeah. She would have loved it,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you can catch it on DVD. Okay, well, thanks everyone for listening. We will be back on Thursday to discuss the final season of Stranger Things in all of its glory.
Yes.
And I have gotten maybe 300 texts from my like 23-year-old cousin about this season.
Oh my gosh.
Discussing. Cute. Because she's the only person I know who has watched it other than me.
Does she want to be on the show? Does she want her podcast debut?
I don't know that we need that. She's very deep in conspiracy theories. She texted me the other day saying, wait, I think there's actually another episode coming. Yeah, there's a secret episode
everyone wants
to be released. And I'm like, you know, no, the girl. Show is bad when you've got like people you know, spazzing out and being like, oh my gosh, like
this has to mean something.
if you look at the blinking light in the background in Morse code, it says another episode.
No. Don't be rude, but that's your family.
Well, yes, and believe me, there was a section where she sort of got me, where I in between the middle section and the finale, I was like, wait a second, I think she might be onto something.
Yeah.
And then the finale, and I was like, what? No, I never said that. That was crazy.
I'm excited.
But we will get into all of that on Thursday. Yes. Thank you all for listening. We will see you later. Bye.